Hello, and welcome to the Reporter Roundtable on Impact 89 FM, the podcast that places student reporters from different news organizations around the Lansing area in conversation with one another to explain and discuss recent news events, stories they have covered, and their experiences as student journalists. I'm your host, Molly Wright, and you are listening to the Reporter Roundtable. All right. Hi, guys. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Reporter Roundtable. We're glad to have you here listening with us on Impact 89 FM. Our stories this week are going to transport us to a haunted lighthouse in northern Michigan to dive deep into its haunted history through the eyes of a paranormal investigator and to an exhibition at our very own MSU museum called Food Fight, which aims to get audiences to critically engage with their food on their plate through colorful artwork addressing topics like GMOs, food waste, and the caring community that surrounds meal culture. Today, I am here with two lovely and accomplished student reporters, Liam Clymer from the State News and Kelsey Lester from Capital News Service, to discuss their recent stories on these topics. Liam's work has been published at the State News, as he works as their events reporter for their culture desk, and Kelsey's work has been featured in publications like Bridge Michigan, The Mining Journal, and The Monroe News. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Thanks, Molly.
Yeah, good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right. I was wondering if you guys could both briefly introduce your stories to our audiences. Kind of what are you here to talk about? And then what inspired you to write a story about it?
So for my story, it was really interesting because it's about a ghost hunter and she's super awesome. Her name's Kat Tedson. And I wanted to compose this story for Halloween. And so I was taking a deep dive into haunted areas around Michigan, and I found this particular lighthouse. I know how to write it, but I do not know how to say it because it is a complex spelling. But I think it's something along the line is like Soul Choi or something like that, lighthouse. But apparently it's haunted. And so I wanted to write about it, and I found this ghost hunter. So I was like, well, this is going to make a really good story.
Yeah. What about you, Liam?
Sure. So with Food Fight at the MSU Museum, I was struck by, you know, first off, what a name for an exhibit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't see something called Food Fight and not immediately be a little bit interested. But as I dug further, I was really intrigued by something they have there called the Collaborator Program, where students at MSU get to come in and kind of like talk about the different exhibits within the exhibition. And one of the coolest parts about it was one of the collaborators, their name was Sydney Urbanek, said that like being able to have a conversation with people and not only like share what you know about a piece, but have them tell you their viewpoint and just talk with people is, you know, a really cool concept to me for an exhibition.
Yeah, awesome. Something that I noticed when I was reading both of your stories is that you really allowed the readers to get a good sense of like the atmosphere that you were reporting on and kind of really focused on telling the story through like sensory descriptions as opposed to just like relying on quotes and testimonies and things like that. And I just thought it made them feel really lively and highlighted kind of like a lot of the quirkiness of both of your stories. Is that something that you guys try to portray in your writing or just kind of happens based on the events that you were reporting on?
Yeah. So for me, I think it really depends on the event that you're covering. Mm-hmm. Because if you're just, I don't know, going to like a news meeting or something, like a student organization, and you need to write a quick story about it, it's like you don't have that much time to be creative and like really dive deep into the atmosphere. But for something like my story where it's literally a haunted lighthouse, you kind of have to build that story for the reader. Because without that story, it's like, okay, this is an interesting topic, but there's no like no substance to the story for the reader. So it really depends on the topic. And I thought that the lighthouse one would be super fun because there are things, spooky tales that you can really open up the reader's eyes to.
Yeah. What about you, Liam?
I feel like I agree to an extent that for different stories, you're going to kind of take a different approach in how you're getting your readers into things. But you know, I feel like the details of whatever you're covering are what's going to make it stand out as a story. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to make anything into something that's going to draw a reader in, I feel like details, whether or not it be like descriptors, are what makes a story.
Yeah, definitely. So Kelsey, I'm going to have you take me through your day when you're reporting on your story. So how did you even hear about the potential haunting of the Solchoy Point Lighthouse?
The potential haunting, I love it. So I was just kind of going, like I said earlier, it was Halloween. And so I wanted to do a spooky story of some sort. So I wanted to do something a bit unique, like that I haven't seen before. Because I think a lot of people have seen, oh, top 10 most haunted places in Michigan, right? And so I wanted to kind of make it unique to Michigan. And so I immediately thought of the Great Lakes and the lighthouses that could be on them. And I have heard a lot of spooky stories about lighthouses. And so I started doing some, I guess, background research. I checked out a bunch of like haunted lighthouse books from the library. Mm-hmm. And I just started reading a bunch about all the different lighthouses. Funny enough, none of the books that I had was the lighthouse that I covered. None of the books had that lighthouse in them.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the reason that I had found this lighthouse was because I reached out to the writer of some of these books that I had found. And she's like a vacation specialist kind of, but she's devoted her life to paranormal activity now because of an experience she had while she was like doing these vacation reviews.
That's awesome.
Interesting. That's yeah. So cool.
Yeah. And so I thought that was awesome. So I reached out to her. And I asked her if there were any haunted lighthouses in Michigan, and she said, I haven't had any experiences with any of the lighthouses except for one. She said, I've been to every lighthouse in Michigan, and wow. I've only had paranormal activity at one. And so I was like, okay, well, this is turning into a feature story. So I guess that's kind of where it started. But yeah, very interesting.
So what techniques do you try to use when you're writing a feature story? I noticed you did a really good job, like I said earlier, kind of trying to create a narrative and tell a narrative in a way that was also like chronological and flowed really well with all of her quotes. So I guess, how'd you fit that in?
Yeah.
Tell me about your process.
Yeah. So I honestly had a lot of help from my editor. I'm the kind of journalist that is super bad with building stories. I really like to just get the information out there. So this story was definitely more challenging for me, I guess. But I loved telling the story when I got to sit down and really write it. I think in my story, I mentioned the smell of the smoke from mm-hmm. Captain Willie, who is apparently the ghost who haunts the lighthouse. And I thought that was a cool picture to build. And I wanted to go chronologically because I felt like it was necessary for the background of the story, for the reader to understand that, hey, here's Captain Willie, but he's actually not the one haunting this lighthouse. So you kind of needed that background, I think.
Yeah. Can you go in and explain kind of the key characters or just briefly tell the story of the haunting that you found out through your interviews?
Of course.
And then, are there any ghosts interviewed?
Yeah.
That end up being a source?
Oh, that's so funny.
That's awesome.
I wish there was a ghost interviewed. Unfortunately, no ghost. No ghost by meaning no ghost interviewed, but however, there might be a ghost. My main characters are, well, Kat Tutson is the main source that I interviewed, and she was the only source that I interviewed in the story. But as far as the lighthouse goes with the hauntings, I have Captain Willie, who is the one that's famous for haunting the lighthouse. But when I was talking to Kat, she said she saw no sign of Captain Willie. Instead, she came in contact with Mary Pemble, who was the mother of a lighthouse keeper's wife right after Captain Willie. So it was interesting because she was kind of going in to like contact Captain Willie, and that didn't end up working out. She came in contact with another woman by the name of Mary. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you call someone and some random person, it's like calling the wrong number.
Yeah.
But still getting your answers.
How can you have so many odd occurrences in one lighthouse?
I know, right? But yeah, she was an interesting person to hear about. Apparently, she had a really severe case of cancer. And at that time, there weren't like a whole lot of things that you could do. And her room was on the very top floor of the lighthouse. And unfortunately, there was a huge storm sometime in February. So it was really like cold in winter. And it was one of those storms where the waters were going up above the lighthouse. And so the water broke her windows in the lighthouse, and it was snowing really hard. And so she actually froze to death, which is gory. But being winter, they couldn't like go outside and bury her body or anything. So they had to take her body and put her in the first floor bathroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because it was cold there. So she was like froze until summer, which sounds really gruesome.
Yeah, yeah, that's really tragic. But I mean, hey, also great opportunity for a ghost.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. You
know, kind of a paranormal origin story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very creepy, but it's really an interesting story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So were you able to visit the lighthouse or were you relying all on Kat's testimony? And did it actually smell like cigars? I've never heard of a stinky ghost before.
Ooh. Yeah, that's funny. So I basically relied on Kat's testimony. I wasn't able to go to the lighthouse because I think it's like 5 hours away from here.
Wow. Yeah.
So I was not about to make that trip, but Kat's interview was so amazing. I felt like I didn't need to go because she described things in such a beautiful way where it was like, okay, I felt like I was kind of being teleported to the lighthouse. And the smell of the cigars too. Apparently Captain Willie is really known for smoking cigars. That's how he died, actually, was from lung cancer. But she said that when she had entered into the lighthouse, she immediately could smell cigar smoke. Which is another testimony that people will often say, like, on their website and things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Stinky ghost sounds like something straight out of Ghostbusters.
I know, right?
Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Stinky ghost.
All right. So overall, what do you want kind of the takeaway of your article to be? It seemed like it was something that was really fun for you to write. Do you do stories like this often?
Yeah, I think I kind of do stories like this often. Usually I really like to do life highlights, I guess, or diving into somebody's life and what they've done and accomplished, because people like to talk about themselves and I'm super curious myself. So I kind of took a dive into Kat's life, and during the interview, we got to talk about the things that she's accomplished and whatnot. And so I really enjoy that aspect of journalism. But for this story, I more so wanted to, I guess, leave the audience with the question of, is there life after death with ghosts and the paranormal activity? So I guess that's kind of obvious because it's a ghost story, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought your ending was really interesting, kind of with her. You ended with the quote of her, was it you asking if there's life after death, or was it Kat?
I think it was Kat.
Kat kind of being like, since she's had so many paranormal experiences, her answer to that question differs from many people. So I thought that was a really interesting note to leave audiences on.
Yeah, and it was super interesting too, because it kind of gave me a wider outlook too, because she likes to say that she's a skeptic. And so she doesn't just believe things to believe things. And so when she was talking, I felt like I could really trust her in a way, but who knows? It's all up for debate, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So Liam,
okay,
tell me about your story. Kind of take us through the reporting process. What happened? Who'd you interview? And then if they said anything that really stood out to you that you knew that you had to highlight in your story, just kind of like your process as a reporter.
Sure. So I heard about this event or this exhibition that was opening up at the MSU Museum called Food Fight. So I went on in to cover it. I met before the event opened with public programming manager Abby Stevens, who kind of talked about the nature of Food Fight and how, like, it's not just an MSU thing. Yes, we're showcasing it here at MSU, but the exhibits have come from all over the world as far as Austria.
Okay.
Really cool. Lots of different, like, outreach to get these projects. And it was just about, like, people's interactions with food. So of course, people have widely, you know, different takes. And to kind of inspire further discussion about this, I talked earlier about the collaborator program, you know, students engaging in discussion instead of just, you know, you look at a plaque or what have you. I thought it was really cool. You know, you go to an exhibit and you get to talk about it. And then just something I thought was really awesome So the space they have in the back of the exhibition hall, they have a space called the Food Fight Commons, mm-hmm. where they're inviting anybody to come and like sign up to rent the space and host your own events about food or whatever. It's just kind of a space to, if it wasn't collaborative enough in nature, like that is the most collaborative thing I've ever heard of, you know?
So. Can you, were you able to attend the exhibition?
Yes. I was there at its like opening night. It was like buzzing with people. It was packed. It was really cool. There's like an exhibit with mushrooms growing out of like food waste on like a dining table.
Interesting.
There was a record made out of, I want to say, cow's blood, like compressed and dried. And it plays the sound of a cow's heartbeat.
Oh, that's creepy.
It was gnarly. But it was really cool. So people were getting so into these projects. And it was just a really cool thing to see and be a part of.
Was there any piece that stood out to you in particular?
Oh, just because of the nature of it, I was so struck by the record I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, you made this out of blood? Like that's...
Yeah, and then it plays a heartbeat.
Yeah.
It's kind of morbid.
So, it really gets you thinking about, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the behind the scenes stuff of food production.
Yeah, what conversations do you think, I guess, the record in particular aimed to start or just the exhibition in general?
I think just in general, the exhibition aims to have you consider your own interactions with food. Abby Stevens, who I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. mentioned that something so fundamental, you know, we hardly ever think about it. You know, I know half the time I'm in a dining hall, like looking at my phone and just kind of like eating food quickly. You know, you got 20 minutes before your next class. But to really unpack this thing that's so fundamental, but has so much that could be talked about. It's, mm-hmm. I think the nature of it, there wasn't one takeaway. It was just to talk about it in general.
Yeah, or kind of take away what you need to. And
yeah, very personal experience.
Interesting. So can you go back into and re-explain kind of the interactive elements of the exhibition? Were there any pieces in particular that you were encouraged to interact with, I guess?
Yeah. So in the Food Fight Commons, they had like, I believe, a whiteboard where you could kind of like write some of your thoughts as you're leaving, talk about that stuff. But a lot of their exhibits were highly interactive. There was one with produce where you would, I believe, put it on a scale and do different activities to show the amount of food waste on average in the US. And also there was like a game that was kind of similar to Mario, that I believe you could go up and physically play it. And I believe was talking about, if I can recall correctly, corn production.
Yeah. I actually have a question for you.
Yeah.
What kinds of questions or comments did you see on the whiteboard as you were leaving?
That's a good question.
Were people like mad about the food, or were people like, oh, I need to like think about this way deeper?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone was mad at the food.
Okay.
I was going to say, I think everyone... At least, you know, from my own perspective and from what I really saw, it's just you leave just thinking about all the little bits and pieces that go into something you do every day, mm-hmm. you know? So it was a lot of almost like philosophical questions about,
oh.
you know, like, oh, I'd never considered this before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about the performance and it sounds like interview by the Detroit poet Natasha T. Miller? What perspective did her performance bring to the exhibit?
Yes, I am so glad you mentioned that. Oh, it was such a cool performance. So to round out the night, they had some live poetry with two different poets, and one of them was Natasha T. Miller. And I believe she read from her book called Butcher. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that's what it's called. So even in the nature of the title, you can kind of see that there's going to be a lot of poetry relating to food consumption and, you know, food in general. It was a really interesting performance. It talked about like food and almost compared it to some of the inequalities we'll find within human life. In the nature of the title of the piece, like Butcher, kind of almost like who's on the chopping block kind of thing, it would seem, you know, who's facing more inequality and prejudice than others. It was really remarkable poetry. And talking to Natasha T. Miller was awesome.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like a really moving piece to be read that fits so well into the exhibit. How did your interview with her, I guess, differ from the poetry that was read or add to your article? Because you kind of use it as your conclusion.
Sure. I left it as my conclusion because I feel Natasha coming in there and speaking about her own interaction with food via poetry is kind of like the intention of the whole exhibition, you know, getting people to create and start conversation about food. And talking to Natasha D. Miller was really just interesting because I found she had a take about how one of my questions for the article was, what does food mean to you, right? And she talked about how, you know, because it's something so fundamental in our everyday, to make food for someone is to show your care for them. Or I believe she simply said that I want you here, you know? And I just thought that was a very beautiful take to end on.
Yeah. She said, I think food is love. I think that when people feed you, the most important thing that they're saying is that I want you here and I want you alive. And I think that's really true.
Yeah.
Like you need as many issues as people have with food and diet and things like that. You do need to eat every day. And the first people that feed you are, you know, comes from the home. So
absolutely.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what was the overall takeaway that you saw from people participating in the exhibit? And then I guess kind of how'd you tie that into your article and what do you want people to take away from the piece that you wrote?
I feel like people's number one takeaway from the exhibition was to be more conscious in general. Food is something that's very easy to overlook. And I think there's a lot of nuance to the topic that can be explored in a variety of ways. You know, I was talking about just some of the wildly different exhibits present. And to see all the impacts of food makes you want to stop and take the time to really unpack, you know, every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of ties into the core of my article. I was hoping to spur discussion. I hope that people were intrigued by what they heard. And of course, I'd like them to, or I'd hope they'd see these exhibits in person. But if not, just reading about them makes you consider your own interactions with food. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then I guess when you're writing the story, what are some of the techniques that you use to make your stories engaging and try to encourage audiences to go seek out these exhibitions in person?
Again, I think it comes down to detail that makes the story special. If you can paint a picture for what people might see or describe some of the odd occurrences. You know, everybody loves to hear about something like a little bit interesting. I know when I just mentioned the record earlier, you guys were like, whoa, you know? And I think that's the reaction a lot of people will take when they hear about these things and they see the details. It'll make them want to interact with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I guess, Kelsey, that question could go to you as well, is what do you do in your stories or throughout your work that you think or hope helps get audiences to engage with the message that you're sending out?
I think something along the same lines, when you're in the position of a journalist and you kind of have that power to, I guess I don't want to say like you're leaning one way or the other because we're supposed to remain biased, but you really do have that power as a journalist to be able to tell a story and tell it good at that. And so I think it's really meaningful just getting to talk with people and really tell their stories because each individual person has something so unique to share. And it's really beautiful. So I guess just being able to share that story for them.
Yeah. All right. So as we're nearing the end of our show today, I have some questions for the two of you about your experiences as student reporters. Both of you don't have to answer each question, but feel free to add your perspective to each other's response. This is a round table, so
yeah.
Feel free to engage in open conversation. So I guess just starting off, how do you guys approach neutrality when writing an article where you want the outcome to be engagement, whether that's clicks or actually going and seeking out the places that you're promoting?
I feel like one of the best ways to do that, and, you know, just kind of sticking to trying to be impartial as a journalist, is to find characters wherever you're at. If you can find engaging and passionate people who want to speak about this themselves or speak against it, speak however, find people who are willing to just talk to you and share their perspective and stories, that often encourages people to derive their own takeaways and be a little bit intrigued by what we're talking about.
I totally agree. I think it really, yeah, it depends on the characters, but also the type of people that you're interviewing. Yeah, like I was saying earlier, everybody has a story to tell. And so I guess in regards to views or clicks, it's like if you just tell a compelling story, because everybody's story is compelling, if you just tell a compelling story and really make it genuine, the views will come, the clicks will come. And it's nice getting to see that value in the story, but then also other people seeing the value in that person.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess at the end of the day, at least for me, when I do a story well, I'm very rarely checking the amount of clicks or engagement. I'll send it to the person once it's out, and that kind of just feels like enough. It's not always about engaging through clicks, but I do really enjoy when I talk to someone about an exhibit, for example, and I hear that they go and we get to talk about it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. One of my favorite responses from people is, wow, I've never been asked that question before.
Yes.
I love that, because then they get to talk about something that they haven't talked about before, and it's great.
Yeah. And they're always so excited too. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, yes, please tell me. Yeah. I'd love to listen. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can get a good story out of it. All right. So how'd you guys find your reporter's voice over time? And then what do you think yours is, if you have an answer for that?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's such a good question, but that is such a hard question.
I know.
Oh. I think for me, it just really took time. And I guess you have to know yourself well first before you can find your reporter's voice. And that's not to say you need to know, like, I don't know everything about your love language or anything like that, but just knowing yourself and your interests and what you value, I think is important to find your voice, because through that, you can tell a compelling story, and the details, like we were talking about earlier, is so important too. So
yeah, good answer. Do you have anything to add, Liam?
I think I'm still finding my reporter's voice, truthfully. And I think that's okay. You know, as you grow and learn as a reporter, you know, I'm sure it'll be something that becomes more concrete. But I think my drive and intention with my reporting is just to have a conversation. If I can be a person to another person, make someone feel seen and heard, then I'm doing my job.
Yeah. All right. So I do have one final question, but it should be very easy for you guys. Where can people find you, your work, or learn more about your organization?
So if you want to search me up, honestly, Google is a good way. I've worked with a lot of different reporting companies, so my articles vary a lot. I don't have one like main bio, but yeah, just a search on Google. And then my Instagram is kelsey.bambi if you want to find me there too.
Yeah, I've really only worked for the State News. So you can find most of my work at statenews.com just by searching my name in the author line. And yeah, my Instagram is Liam Clymer with no spaces. So there you go.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much for taking your time out of your day to come here and sit down with me. It's been my pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
You were great.
It's been so fun.
And that's it for our show. Thank you to our station manager, Delaney Rogers, general manager, Jeremy Whiting, and program director, McKenna Lowndes. And as always, thank you to you, our listeners. If you are interested in going back and listening to our archive of stories, feel free to check out our website at impact89fm.org. And of course, if you're interested in what's going on next week, you can tune back in at 10:30 and we'll see you back here. You've been listening to the Reporter Roundtable.